The last three verses of Nehemiah are chapter 2, verses 18 to 20, I want to look at this morning. And we'll read verse 18 together, verse 18 of Nehemiah chapter 2. We read, "Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And I said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work." In the area of athletics, there are many different types of sporting activities. There are sports where you throw, such as the javelin or the discus or the shot put. There are also sports where you kick, such as rugby or football. There are also sports where you run. For example, in athletics and especially in the Olympics, there are many different type of running events that you can partake in. They are dependent upon the length that you run. For example, there are runners who run a marathon, and they run some 26 miles. However, there are much shorter races where you can run just 100 or 200 meters. And in these short distance races, the issue of how you get off and how you start is of vital importance. You ask any runner, especially any sprinter, and they'll tell you how you start is of utmost importance. And in sprinting races, they have a little thing to help them start the race. Whenever they're bent over and they're waiting on the whistle or the gun or whatever it is, if you look carefully, you will discover that sprinters, they use what are called starting blocks. They put their heels back into the starting blocks. They wait for the whistle of the referee or the umpire. And then they use the starting block to push off and to commence the race. And the phrase, the starting blocks, or being in the starting blocks, it really conveys that idea. The fact that they're ready, that they have everything set, and they're about to start the race. Now here in these last three verses of Nehemiah chapter 2, the children of Israel, they're in the starting blocks. They have their heels, as it were, dug in, and they are waiting on the whistle. They're waiting on the gunshot of their leader as they start the race of building the walls of Jerusalem. Prior to these last few verses in chapter 2, we saw last week that Nehemiah had just encountered a change of occupation. Nehemiah, he landed at the building site. He was confronted with the rubble. And we saw last week that he changed his occupation from being Nehemiah the cupbearer to Nehemiah the builder. And now we find he's gathered the rulers, the priests together. He has given them the plan. And they're in the starting blocks. They're about to commence the building work. And as they're about to start this work, as they're in the building blocks, you find that they are making all the necessary preparation to commence the work of rebuilding. You read in verse 18 that they strengthened their hands for this good work. So you find them here, they're getting ready, they're about to start the race. However, as they start the race, as they start this building work, Nehemiah with whistle in his hands, there's a false start. I'm sure you've seen that in sometimes in the Olympics or in races. There's a false start, and the racers, they go forward and then they have to go back and start again. And here we find there was a false start as they tried to get out of the starting blocks. Nehemiah, he had the whistle in his hands, and as soon as he was about to blow that whistle, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, they all appear on the scene and they attempt to stop the commencement of the work of God. And child of God, this morning, when you're in the starting blocks and you want to get off to a quick start, you will often meet with a false start. Often when you're ready, you're itching to go, maybe the Lord's speaking to you about a service for him, you'll meet with a false start as you meet with opposition to your work. Often the Sanballats, the Tobias, the Geshems, just as you're ready, just as you're set, just as you have, as it were, prepared yourself, they will come and they will attempt to stop you as you commence your service for him. The Apostle Paul, he found this in Acts chapter 13. He had just begun his first missionary journey, and he took a little boat from Antioch, the home church, and he took a little boat to the island of Cyprus. And as he entered the island of Cyprus and he travelled down through that island, he met there with a high-ranking official who wanted to become a Christian. But as he met that individual, Sergius Paulus, we also read in Acts 13 and verse 8 that Elymas the sorcerer withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. The verb withstood here, it literally means to stand against or to stand in opposition. And here we find Paul as he was beginning his first missionary journey. As he sought to lead someone to Christ, there was someone also there to withstand him. Someone there to stand against him as he sought to serve the Lord. And in seeking to get out of the starting blocks, there will always be those who will stand with you, but there will also be those who will stand against you. Tobias and Ballots and Gatians, they'll rise up, and as soon as you want to start the race, they'll do everything they can. They'll do everything that they can to stop you. Oh, the enemy, he will rise up and he will seek to hinder you. And that's exactly what's happening here. Nehemiah, he's landed in Jerusalem. He's told them the plans. He wants them to start the building project. And they meet with a false start. As they're getting out of the starting blocks, they meet with a false start. And this morning I want to consider very simply getting out of the starting blocks. Getting out of the starting blocks. Notice firstly here with me the stimulation they received. Looking at the children of Israel as they sought to get out of the starting blocks, Nehemiah, he stimulated them. Verse 18 we read, "Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me." Nehemiah had just landed in Jerusalem, and once he had inspected the walls, he formed a plan in his mind. And last week we saw in verse 17 that he gathered the rulers, the nobles and the priests together, and he started to inform them of the task ahead. He set before them the great need of the broken gates and walls. And we saw last week that he inspired them by showing them the task that they were to do. And he continues on to inspire his troops, as it were, and he begins to stimulate them as they were about to now get out of the starting blocks. Now, how did he stimulate them? Well, verse 18 tells us, "I told them of the good hand of my God, which was upon me." And he simply, as they were gathered there together, he rehearsed how the Lord had directed him to Jerusalem. How when he was waiting and how he was praying in Persia, then the king, King Artaxerxes, came to him and gave him those letters. And then how he also provided for him all the timber. He rehearsed to them as they sought to get out of the starting blocks. He rehearsed to them how God had providentially led him thus far. And this would have encouraged them to see God's hand, how he had been in everything so far, how he had called Nehemiah, how he had led Nehemiah, how he had given him this plan. And they would have been encouraged and stimulated as they saw the hand of God in everything thus far. And it reminds us that a surveil of past blessings will then help you and strengthen you for present undertakings. Like Nehemiah, when you rehearse the good hand of your God which has been upon you, then you're strengthened to get out of the starting blocks and launch out into the future. Oh, when you're beginning to start something, perhaps you're starting out in a new avenue in life or a new service for the Lord, it's always good to look back. It's always good to look back and see God's hand upon you. It's good to rehearse, to recount how God's hand has been good upon you in the past. You find the children of Israel, they did this over and over again as they walked with the Lord. In Deuteronomy 6, verse 12, as they were about to enter the promised land, Moses, he gathered them round together, and he said there, "Beware, lest thou forget the Lord, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt." And whenever they were about to enter the promised land, Moses, he told them, "Look, don't forget. Don't forget how God has led you thus far. Don't forget how God will take you into the promised land." Again, when they entered the promised land, Joshua, the leader that followed Moses, he gathered the people round together. And on his deathbed, he said in Joshua 24, verse 3, I took your father Abraham from the other side of the flood and led him throughout all the land of Canaan. And again, we read there that he gathered all of the children of Israel together, the heads there and of the families. And again, he reminded them how God had spoken to Abraham, how he had given him that covenant, that promise that he would take them to the land. And now how God had fulfilled that promise and brought them into Canaan. A remembering of the past will help you to live in the present. Whenever you look back and you rehearse the good hand of God upon you, his providences, his deliverances, his assistances, they will help you start off at present. Oh, you seeking to serve the Lord, it's always good to look back. Look back and see how God has led you thus far. Look back and see the good hand of God upon you, the stimulation they received. But notice secondly here, as they were seeking to get out of the starting blocks, the preparation they made. In verse 18 we read then, and they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Nehemiah had moved to encourage the workers that would soon be helping him to rebuild the work of Jerusalem. And when he spoke of the need, he spoke of how God had providentially brought him there. And they would have been encouraged by what they had heard thus far. They then responded in this verse, let us rise up and build. And it was almost like they were all singing off the same hymn sheet. As soon as they heard how God had brought Nehemiah into their midst, they all rose up in this chorus and they said, let us rise up and build. And now they realized that the time had come. The time had come to get out of the starting blocks. The time had come to start in the service of God. And we read that they then made preparation. We read in this verse, they strengthened their hands for this good work. They made all necessary preparation to start this building project. And getting off the starting blocks, it requires motivation and inspiration and perspiration, but it also requires preparation. You wish to start off and see God move and see God bless. Well, there needs to be a getting of the gloves on, a getting of the spades ready, before there can be a digging in the rubble and a building of God's kingdom. Oh, spiritually speaking, we need to get the spades out. We need to get ready, as it were. And I wonder, are you preparing? Are you preparing adequately? Are you preparing correctly? As the Lord is dealing with you about serving him in that particular avenue of service for him, I wonder, are you making the necessary preparation? Like the children of Israel here, are you strengthening your hands for this good work? Indeed, in crossing over Jordan and heading into the promised land, Joshua, he told the children of Israel to get ready and prepare themselves. We read in Joshua 1, verse 10 and 11, then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host and command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days ye shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land. And whenever the children of Israel were crossing over Jordan, Joshua, he came to the leaders. He told them to go throughout the group of the children of Israel and to get ready, to prepare food. For in 3 days they were crossing the river Jordan. And rather than being unprepared, God wants you to be prepared. He wants you to be ready for when he calls you to serve him. Oh, in seeking to get out of the starting blocks, there needs to be that preparation. You can't just launch straight into a service of God. There needs to be that adequate preparation of heart and of thought and of mind. You think of what we were considering earlier, the runner in the race. You know, as the runner enters the Olympics, they don't just show up. They make necessary preparation. Sometimes they've been preparing for months, years, even a whole decade, perhaps even their whole life, all for that one moment. You even see them as they, just a few minutes before the race, as they're doing their warm-ups, as they're doing their stretches. They want to make sure that they're ready to get off the starting blocks. And in God's work, there needs to be a doing of the stretches. There needs to be a preparing of yourself, that necessary preparation as we want to get off the starting blocks. Oh, I would say even here collectively, as we wish to get off the starting blocks, we need to prepare ourselves. We need to prepare ourselves for the task that God is asking us to do. The stimulation they received, the preparation they made. Notice thirdly here the opposition they experienced. In verse 19 we read, "When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us, and said, 'What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king?'" These three men, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, they were probably chief men amongst the Samaritans. Prior to the children of Judah returning, you find that the Samaritans, they had planted a people in the midst of Jerusalem. And these three men, they probably held offices there amongst the group of Samaritans. In verse 10, you find that when Nehemiah originally came, you find that Sanballat and Tobiah, they were grieved that Nehemiah was coming. Now a third person has entered the fray. A third person has begun to join them as well. Now we find them, they were all joining together in their hatred for the Jews. And as the rulers and nobles, as they were having their first board meeting, as it were, seeking to get everything ready, thrash out the last details of the plan, these three men gathered together and were told here that they laughed us to scorn. They simply laughed at the children of Israel. The phrase here, it means to mock or to laugh repeatedly. And here's this small group of Jews. They're trying to fortify the walls of Jerusalem. They're coming up with this plan to do a tremendous work. And the enemy laughed at them. The enemy laughed them to scorn. The enemy, they despised them as they sought to make plans to rebuild the walls. And in seeking to get out of the starting blocks, whilst you will know encouragement, you will also meet with enmity. Whilst the Lord's own will rally around you, the Lord's enemies will rally against you. And perhaps you've encountered this recently. Perhaps you've been encountering some opposition. The Tobias, the Sanballats, the Geshems. Just as you're seeking to start, seeking to go on with God, seeking to read your Bible, seeking to pray, maybe just starting off in the Christian life, and you find then there's a Tobiah, there's a Sanballat, there's a Geshem, and they're laughing you to scorn. They're sowing seeds of doubt in your mind. They're slandering you. Oh, the enemy, that's always what he'll do. Satan will always stop you the moment you want to start. Indeed, in the book of Acts, Paul experienced this. We saw how he went to Cyprus. Well, shortly after Cyprus, he then went to Antioch of Pisidia. And as he entered the little synagogue there in Antioch in Pisidia, you read in Acts 13, verses 44 and 45, "The next Sabbath day came almost the whole city together to hear the word of God. But when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and speak against those things which were spoken by Paul." And we find here that as soon as Paul entered the synagogue, it seems as if the whole city wanted to hear the word. But no sooner did they all gather together, and the Jews rose up and they stirred themselves against the apostle Paul. And with every encouragement to help you, you will always meet a discouragement to hinder you. There will always be something, someone, some problem that will stop you and deter you as you seek to go on with God. As you seek to launch out and get out of the starting blocks, you'll always meet with opposition. You know, Hudson Taylor was a missionary to China. Whenever he arrived in China, he first landed in Shanghai. He labored there for a few years, but he soon had a burden to go round the outer coast of China. As he traveled round the outer coast of China, he eventually came to another area and he set up base there. He began to settle there and start a preaching station there. And he also had his family there, and it seems that they were beginning to get settled. He built a house there, and He stocked up a medical cupboard just in case there were any medical difficulties. And just when he had finished stocking up his medical cupboard, one night there were people who were opposing him. They walked in, they burned the house down whilst his family was there, and they also stole everything out of his medical cupboard. And whenever the next morning he got out safely and he looked at his burning house and he thought of all the work that had went into it, he simply said, "If we expect God to open the windows of heaven upon us, we must also be sure that the devil will open the windows of hell against us." And child of God, you can be sure of that. When, like Nehemiah, you want God to open the windows of heaven upon you, be sure that the devil will be not too far behind. And he'll seek to open the windows of hell against you. The stimulation they received, the preparation they made, the opposition they experienced. Notice fourthly here the intervention they saluted. In verse 20 we read, "Then answered I them, and said unto them, The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build." Whenever you consider the nationalities of Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, you begin to discover that they were not Israelites. In fact, when you look at their nationalities, they were all natives of countries that had warred previously against Israel. And whenever they had begun to mock and scorn the Israelites, you then find Nehemiah, the leader of the people. He steps in on their behalf, and he intercedes on the behalf of his people, and he deals with the opposition that is presented. They had accused the Lord's people in verse 19 of rebelling against the king. And Nehemiah, he could have proved that this was wrong. These men, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, they were really saying, "Look, this job that you're doing, this business of rebuilding the walls, you're rebelling against the king. Does King Artaxerxes know about this? Why are you doing this? Has he given you permission?" And you know, it's very interesting, Nehemiah's response here is he intervened and interceded on behalf of his people. He had the necessary papers from the king himself. He could have went to these people and said, "There you are, there's my permission. There's my papers." But he didn't do it. He simply stated in verse 20, when he intervened on behalf of his people, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us." And despite the opposition, he reminded the people and reminded their enemy that God would prosper their endeavors for him. And when you face opposition, like Nehemiah and the people faced, you should not be fearful, but faithful. Faithful and also focused. Refocus on the fact that God has called you, God has commissioned you, and because he has done these things, he will prosper you. Your answer to the enemy should always be, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us." Whenever the enemy comes and seeks to stop you, seeks to deter you, that should be your answer. Yes, it's easy to fear, it's easy to fret, but if God's commissioned you, then he will prosper you. Indeed, in Psalm 37, we read in verse 1, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity." And the phrase "fret not" in the Bible, it just simply means don't worry. Don't be anxious. And David here, he was experiencing the enemy. He was fighting the enemy. The enemy was beginning to prosper. But the Lord came to David and said, "Fret not, David. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't bother yourselves because of the evildoers." And rather than fearing the enemy, fret not because of the enemy. God has said to you, "Don't worry. I'll prosper you." The fact that the enemy is rising up and is stopping you, that's just an indication that you're in my will. That's just an indication that I've called you, that I've commissioned you, and that the devil doesn't like what I'm doing with you. Martin Luther's wife, Martha, she was once very concerned for Martin Luther. He sat in his study for many days. He began to dress differently. He was experiencing a very, 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 very deep spirit of melancholy. His wife, after a while, she came to him and she said, "Martin, is God dead?" Martin Luther rose up immediately. He couldn't believe his wife would blaspheme in such a way. And he asked her, why did she say such things? And she simply said, "Well, Martin, you're living like he's dead. And that's why I asked you the question." And then he realized his stupidity. And so often, whenever we see the enemy rise up and gathering momentum, we sometimes live as if God's dead. But we must remember that there is a God in heaven. And he is alive forevermore. And he's promised you this morning, he will prosper you. He will prosper the plans that you have. As you seek to launch out, as you seek to get out of the starting blocks, as you seek to serve the Lord, he will prosper you. Notice lastly here, the rejection they presented. We read in verse 20, the last part of the verse, "But you have no portion nor right nor memorial in Jerusalem." And as Nehemiah, as he interceded on behalf of his people and he reminded them that there was a God in heaven, he also was basically dismissing the attack of the enemy. He was basically saying to Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, as he told them they had no portion in this land, "Look, you're not an Israelite. You're not a Jew. This really doesn't concern you. It has nothing to do with you." And in a gentle but courteous manner, he dismissed the enemy as it was nothing to do with them. T.S. Randall, in his books, Laws of Leadership and Nehemiah, he said concerning this incident, "Wisely, Nehemiah didn't pay attention to every dog that barked, but he reserved his strength to oppose his real enemies." In other words, he simply dismissed the enemy and refocused on the task that was before him. And there are times when we need to go on the offensive against the enemy. But there are other times when, Nehemiah, we just need to be dismissive. We need to dismiss their attacks and refocus and say, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us." Often, when the enemy rises up, it's no more than just a bark. Just the bark of a dog. And there really is no need to get too concerned with their barking. Getting out of the starting blocks. Here's Nehemiah and his gathering now his group together. And they're about to get out into the work of God. They're about to launch out. They're in the starting blocks. The whistle is blown. But the enemy comes here and they want a false start to happen. They want to prolong. They want to stop the service of God. But Nehemiah refocused his people by saying, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build." May God bless his word to your hearts and lives this morning.